Good evening. Welcome to Left, Right and Centre. I'm Vishnu Shom on the programme tonight. Days ahead of polling in Telangana, the Prime Minister pulls out all the stops. Heavy election campaigning. Lots of key moments, as you can see. There's one clear message from the BJP. Our resolve is to send corrupt BRS leaders to jail. That may be all very well, but the BJP knows that it's going to be an uphill task in the three-cornered poll. The BRS, despite the setback of not being able to disburse funds under its Raitu Bandhu scheme after the Election Commission stopped the transfers, still has extremely well-entrenched networks and will be pushing for last-minute sentiment in their favour. The Congress, though confident with Rahul Gandhi saying goodbye KCR, that's also a factor. On the show tonight, the BJP's last push in Telangana, can it dent the BRS bastion? Next up on the show, farm fires in Punjab have disappeared, but the air pollution across large parts of North India have been horrific. There is some welcome relief with evening rainfall in the national capital, but it is a bit much to link the right to breathe with a hope that it rains. I'm sure you'll agree. On the show tonight, going well beyond Punjab's annual agricultural stubble burning nightmare, the overall causes of air pollution in the national capital region, why do we continue with this nightmare? And finally, a very special report. Houseboats and Dal Lake in Kashmir have been synonymous forever. But now, despite an upsurge in tourism, houseboat owners are struggling to stay afloat. The number of houseboats has dwindled. Can a key part of Kashmir's identity be saved? But first, Telangana votes in just a couple of days from now on the 30th of this month. It's been a busy day for all parties, not least of all the Prime Minister. Uma Sudhir has been tracking his movements. Uma, thanks very much for being with us. A big day for the Prime Minister, last minute campaigning, lots of optics there as well. If I were to ask you, is there any one factor that the BJP is essentially relying on to break the stranglehold of the BRS over them?
Okay, while political observers will say that the BJP would rather prefer a BRS government here rather than a Congress government, the way the BJP has campaigned, including the Prime Minister, Mr. Amit Shah, JP Nadda and others. In fact, Prime Minister spent 3 days here in Telangana just taking an overnight trip to Tirupati and came back and campaigned in Mehboobabad and then in Karimnagar and then came down to do a roadshow here where, in fact, I am sitting. This is the RTC crossroads from where, you know, these kind of barricades were, in fact, put up on the road to be allowing the cavalcade to move through smoothly through, and with their face of not just the state BJP chief, but also OBC Morcha chief, Dr. Lakshman, who obviously will remind people that the BJP has spoken about an OBC chief minister for Telangana if the BJP were to be given a chance, opportunity by the people of Telangana. So what I would say is that the BJP is pushing hard. If the last time they got only a 7% vote, one seat in Gosha Mahal, they of course went up to 20% in the Lok Sabha polls. But this time round, they are increasing their vote share manyfold, I must say, and they would also be hoping for many more seats. And if they are going to be getting virgin territory in the form of becoming the representative of the OBC community here, because whether it's the BRS or the Congress, they are not seen as having given the kind of importance that the BJP managed to give to them by allotting 40 seats, whereas the Congress and the BRS had given 23 and 22 tickets to people from the OBC community. So the push of the Prime Minister is to say that we are going to target, or rather reach out to those communities which remain unrepresented, which are numerically one of the largest, 52%, plus the SC subcategorization that he has been speaking about. Those are the two big communities, should I say, which the BJP is hoping to reach out to increase its ground presence and also its vote share and the number of seats here in Telangana. Back to you.
Uma, thanks very much for joining us. I'm joined at this stage by representatives of the BRS, the Congress and the BJP, Karuna Gopal of the BJP, Dr. Shama Mohammed of the Congress Party and Professor Rekha Rao of the BRS. Thank you all very much for being with us. Shama Mohammed, let me come to you first. Amit Shah has said, and I quote, both the Congress and the BRS have reached an agreement to cooperate with each other in the event of a tight fight. The Congress, he said, will support the BRS so that K. Chandrasekhar Rao could become Chief Minister, and in return, the BRS will support the Congress in the Lok Sabha elections so that Rahul Gandhi can become Prime Minister. How would you respond?
I mean, this is really ridiculous. I mean, we have an India alliance in which there is no MIM and there is no BRS. And we all know that Kavita Rao, who has been involved in the liquor scam, is the only one who's not arrested. There's a deal happening over here. And every bill in the Rajya Sabha, whether it was GST, whether it was triple talaq, Article 370, the farmers bill, who did KCR stand with? With the Bhatiya Janata Party. And the biggest thing is removing Bandi Sanjay. He was very popular. And putting Kishan Reddy there so that the votes all go to BRS and the BJP is a weak party. The basic deal is that in the assembly elections, they want the BRS to win and not the Congress. And BRS in turn will support them in the Lok Sabha because they have a lot of cases against them.
So there's no deal. That's your key point.
Of course, it is because everybody knows that. I've been here for a month. And also the fact that how AIMM is campaigning for the BRS candidates. And you said Gosha Mahal was the only seat Raja Singh, the BJP candidate, won. Why did he win? Because there was no candidate from MIM.
Let me get a quick response, Shama, from Karuna Gopal. Ma'am, the Prime Minister, Amit Shah, seemed to suggest that there is a deal which has been set in place. Does the BJP truly stand with that? Because, you know, it's not as if the BRS is part of the India alliance.
Sorry, I missed you.
Can you hear me now, Karuna Gopal?
Yeah, can you
the point mentioned by Amit Shah that there is a deal between the Congress party and the BRS, does the BJP really stand by that point? I ask because the BRS is not part of the India alliance.
See, what they profess and what they end up doing at the end are two different things. So we are just staring at elections and anything can happen. And when they say that Congress claims that we are the B team of BRS and we know it's quite preposterous to even say that. So I certainly believe that Congress is doing its own, math. It's trying to portray it as an alternative in TRS, but everybody in the Telangana know the credibility of Congress party. You know, it might have got a state like Karnataka, but you see how it messed it up soon after. It won in Himachal Pradesh the very next day. They started imposing taxes on diesel and petrol just to ensure that they get a little bit of money. So everybody knows there's no credibility for Congress. It can say anything that it wants. The truth is that the state of Telangana definitely needs a change. And BRS has been a party that has promised a lot. A lot of hot air is what we hear today. Completely unfounded.
All right. So let me get a quick response from the BRS.
Can I just come in one second? Just buttons. He said, there's no credibility. There's no credibility. I'll tell you what is credibility, ma'am. Credibility is when you do an announcement for 5 guarantees. All right. In May, we did that announcement before the elections. 4 are already done. The 5th one will be done in December in Karnataka. That is called credibility. When we said we'll bring in the old pension scheme in Himachal, in 1 week's time, we get it. Unlike your party, which was supposed to give you 2 crore jobs. My God. And what did you say about Mengai? Price rise. The diesel prices are high during our time. Now it's more than 100. Gas price when it was 420 during our time is now 1,100.
Okay,
so what is your credibility? You have nothing to talk about.
Okay, one second, Shabash. I think Karuna Gopal has a right to respond. Ma'am, go ahead.
Dr. Rao is waiting. You're presenting a laundry list of what you have done. But if I have to sit and state what we have done, to the entire country, forget about one or two states that we are...
Can you say one thing?
Let her reply, Shama.
One second,
Shama. No fighting over here. You asked a question,
exactly.
Let her reply.
You don't have to be belligerent. Please have logic and keep...
Go ahead, ma'am.
I'm trying to tell you that India, under UPA, we know from where we moved and where we arrived. Today, from Fragile 5... to the topmost nations, it is my government that took it forward. You have to accept it. You know that we are moving up in all indicators. The people are being treated with enormous amount of equanimity. Look at the housing, in Congress. I just have to tell you that the low-cost housing, 8 lakhs were built. We are building more than 3 crores. So these are the numbers. So numbers are staring at your face.
Okay.
And
your number.
Okay, but 1 second, Shama. Let me. It is only fair that we talk about the BRS on this program, right? Okay, so to the BJP and the Congress, please wait. The BRS has been waiting very patiently. Professor Rao, the Prime Minister has asserted today that his party's resolve is to send corrupt leaders of your party to jail. How would you respond? Professor Rao, go ahead.
I think she's frozen.
Ma'am, I think you're on mute. Press that unmute button and I'm sure you'll be fine. Professor Rao, could you press the unmute button?
Yeah.
Go ahead, ma'am. Answer the question.
BRS is like a hot cake. Everyone is willing to associate each other. Congress says BJP is with BRS and BJP says that Congress and BRS are together. That is the position of BRS. So strong we are, number one. Number two, yes, Prime Minister Modi was here and he was just giving out some dialogues which he learned in Telugu. Coming back, whether it is going to be BJP or BRS, there is no second, is going to be in power once again. There is no second thought when we say the program and the progress, the things done by BRS is tremendous.
No, that's all very well, but but Dr. Rao, my specific question, the Prime Minister said that he will ensure that your leaders are jailed for corruption. Respond to that.
If our leaders were corruption, what is the government doing? What is the CBI doing? People are waiting to pounce upon, and if our leaders were corrupt, they wouldn't have been silent. Where is the law? You mean to say that the central has failed? If not only BRS, any state, if corruption is there, what is the government doing? Why are they not taking the action? They
all
are
right.
not
so
taking
all talk
action
and no action
our people
thus far.
Are sincere, they're hardly working. And
so, Karuna Gopal, that's almost an open challenge. If there are leaders to be arrested, why hasn't that happened?
We know the process, as we have been discussing all through, when the case is with the ED. And when courts are there, why are you questioning the government? So it will take its own course, and whoever has to land up where they deserve to, they will end up there.
Karuna Gopal, let me ask you this. Rahul Gandhi mocked the BJP for your poll promise that you'd make a backward caste leader your chief minister. Mr. Gandhi said you first secure 2% votes and then talk about making someone chief minister. Those were essentially the words that he used.
See,
again,
Rahul
how would
Gandhi,
you reply to that?
I'm saying Rahul Gandhi says many things. He says not only on this land, but in other parts of the world as well. So he is free to say whatever he wants. And we know how eloquent he is, how he fumbles, how he makes those mistakes. So we are very, we don't really pay that much attention to him for the simple reason that we know what we are. We know what we have done to this nation. For instance, when the question about what we have done arises. The simple question is, under UPA, we had a zero GDP contribution from manufacturing. Look at where we are. No amount of face making will help the situation. Please understand that today we are self-sufficient. If you believed in, your economists who you fed phenomenally, they will tell you that, India is not cut out for manufacturing. Today, India is a back office for services. We've been misled. We missed an entire revolution, third industrial revolution, thanks to UPA and its, policies.
All right, okay, ma'am. We're focusing on Telangana primarily, but you believe that those international factors might have an impact in Telangana as well. Shama has a point to make. Go ahead, Shama.
Yeah, Vishnu, she spoke a lot, and I just want to remind her that we had an average GDP of 8.5. So the GDP right now is dismal. So let's not get into that. We're speaking about
the GDP isn't dismal. Just a point of correction, Shama.
The
GDP among nations of our size in the world is not dismal. It's not dismal by the IMF, the World Bank, or any international institution.
Can I
Indian institutions?
They have increased it by 2%. All right, when they came in 2014, the way they calculated, and what was our GDP? 3.5%.
Could you look at any developing country and name one which has India's GDP growth rate, Shama? That's a separate.
I'm talking about average of 10 years. Can you give me a GDP of 8.5? It is not.
What about average?
Why don't you look at the world right now around you? How many countries are even remotely close to India?
I want to speak about the GDP.
India is an outlier to growth, Shama.
No, India is not an outlier.
It is an international outlier by any measurement and statistic.
I will not agree on that.
At international organizations.
You can talk about it, then why don't we have jobs? Why don't we have jobs? Why are we having unemployment?
GDP is not necessarily linked to job creation. You can make that argument that we need to have jobs, but just on the point of GDP, Shama, respectfully, I disagree. But carry on with what you're saying about
Kelly. I agree to disagree with you, but I disagree with you, sir.
But carry on with the point you're making.
GDP is not, okay, now I'm going back to the point, is backward classes you spoke on. They just say we are giving tickets, but we make chief ministers. We have backward class chief ministers in Chhattisgarh, Rajasthan, as well as in Karnataka. So we are not putting up people like that as puppets or anything. We give real power. I mean, you don't give real power to people. And then she was, she was going on talking about what I have asked her. Tell me one thing you have done. Now, if you're supposed to arrest someone for corruption, you need to arrest Ajit Pawar. He was having an ED investigation for a very long time. As soon as he joined your party and became the deputy chief minister, you stopped the arrest. Why don't you arrest him? He should be behind bars right now. The prime minister of India, just before he became the deputy chief minister, said that he's the most corrupt person in the world 1 week before that.
I'm surprised that you expect the government to do anything. Don't you have any kind of pain?
And also the fact, one more thing, Vishnu, what I see every day in the paper with the BRS is they are giving now new schemes. Just like we have given in our Raitu Bharosa, 15,000 for farmers who have land and tenant farmers. And those who don't have either, we are giving 12,000. They only gave farmers with land 10,000 in their Raitu Bandhu. And that too, they did not finish the payment.
They didn't finish the payment because they were prevented by the Election Commission.
Prevented because the model code of conduct came in, Vishnu.
Yes, so that's not their fault.
That is the EC's. EC has taken a call. It's not us.
Correct, but it's EC not their fault. So when you say that they couldn't complete the payment, they couldn't complete the payment for no fault of their own.
They could have paid much before, Vishnu. They could have paid much before. What I'm trying to say is they could have paid much before.
Let me get Professor Rao. No, Shama, you made an important point. In fact, I wanted to talk about the scheme itself. The fact that you've been unable to pay the amount that was due, the Congress argues that you could have paid this earlier on. Were you unable to, Professor Rao?
Why should we pay before? Why did the Election Commission first agree and then disagree? Why was Congress so foolish? These are the questions I would like to know. People, they know it is KCR who has launched these big schemes. And Raitu Bandhu has been appreciated by international organizations like UNO as well. So it doesn't make sense. Whether Congress, it stops a few days or few months at the end of the day, in December 3rd, anyway, we are going to come back and Raitu Bandhu will be released.
No, but is it not a setback for you at this stage? Because if you look at Raitu Bandhu and promises which had been made in the last election, the BRS gained tremendously in 2018. The fact that you are no longer able to give that promise and mass message people saying that you will be given this very soon on the day that many were out voting, you won't be able to do that this time around. Isn't that a setback for the BRS?
Because people know it is KCR who initiated. So there is not a bit of doubt.
Vishnu, I have one question for her. I just want to ask her, why did you give only Raitu Bandhu to farmers who own land? Why not to the tenant farmers and the landless? We are doing it. You know, we have promised it and we will do it. You did not give it to them. And that is really wrong because they really needed much more. But you did not. And that too now, Vishnu, they have put in ads. I can see it, how the gas prices are going to go down, how it's gone from 10,000 to 16,000 because we have put in 15,000. So I fail to understand that they had 9 years. Why didn't they do all these things, what they've promised to do? None of these, if you come to Hyderabad, Or you come to Telangana, you see only development in Hyderabad. You just go out of Hyderabad to Kutbullapur, Kukatpalli, Tandur, any of them, Parigi, any of these places, you will see Vikarabad. There are no roads. There
in fact, I wanted to ask Professor Rao about that. Even if you look at civic infrastructure, the fact that flooding takes place constantly in your biggest cities in Hyderabad, etc., despite the construction of several flyovers, choke points exist. How do you say that Telangana is a modern masterpiece when basic civic infrastructure has not been solved?
Okay. Overnight development cannot take place. It takes place in phased manner.
No, but ma'am, it's not overnight. You've been in power for some time now.
No, it is happening now. If we talk about Swachh Bharat? If Telangana is not neat and clean, when you are talking about civic, that is a condition of entire India. But when you come to Telangana, it is very neat and clean.
No, it is not. I am in Telangana and areas just around Hyderabad, you know, you have to go to Asaduddin Oasis constituencies. MIM is who's very close to, and all of the places where BRS is. I mean, there is no, go to Khammam, go to any of these districts a little far. You will find that they are not developed. There is no development, no roads, no schools, no hospitals, nothing. I mean, the literacy rate is well below the national average here. The national average is around 76. You're around 66. Why is that? Why are they not?
Okay, Professor Rao, quickly answer that before I go back to Karuna Gopal. The issue of infrastructure, ma'am, please answer.
Development is, she's talking about no education. That is the most biggest joke of the nation. If you see, we are giving 20 lakhs to the economically poor people. Unconditional, once they go and study, there is no need for them to...
They don't get it, they haven't yet
one.
Got it.
Number two, when you're talking about neatness...
Professor Rao, go ahead.
It is an implementation, I think you need to do your homework properly. You haven't done your homework, you have to study what about Telangana and what is Telangana now. When you talk about IT, when you talk about medicine, when you talk about education, we are number one. There is no second thought about it.
All right. We'll see what finally happens. One final question.
You came in.
One second. One final question to Karuna. One of the themes which really came up in this election campaign was turmeric. And the fact that the Prime Minister announced the establishment of a national turmeric board in Nizamabad, it's been a long-standing demand. It's not happened in the past. Do you believe that this is some sort of a trump card that the BJP has so that you can, you know, increase the number of seats you had just one last time around? Karuna.
No, I think, you know, just by depending on turmeric board, you expect us to win. No,
is this a factor?
No, absolutely not. I mean, we waited and then we asked for it. There was Kavita also asking for it, and we thought it's a legitimate request and a demand. And I ensured that it is coming our way. Nothing to do with elections at all. But I would like to just say that two things. The first is that BRS, you know, came into power, had 9 years and messed it up big time with all, you know, big promises, and they couldn't deliver on all the three promises they made in terms of, you know, getting funds or getting jobs or getting water. So all the things have been done. Now, unfortunately, that created a crevice, that created a kind of, let's say, a sliver of hope for Congress, and Congress is not trying to, you know, get into the fray. But if you go back and check the history of, you know, United Andhra Pradesh, Congress literally did nothing to the state. If the state has improved in terms of development and growth, unequivocally, I will say it is because of Chandrababu Naidu, who had a vision. Congress, after that, rode on the glory of whatever has been made already.
All right. So, well, ma'am,
Of their alliance with TDP and also Vishnu, there are many promises. There are corruption issues here. There's a Dharani portal in which 22 lakh farmers have lost their land. There is the Kaleshwaram irrigation scam. Everybody knows about. They promised 2 BHK to 5 lakh people. Nobody has got it. Just a lakh.
It's our money.
So lots of promises. And unemployed in the manifesto says unemployed youth will get 3,116 into the account in 2018. None of them got a penny. I mean, how many promises you have not kept? Everybody knows it out here. And that's why you are out on the 3rd of December and it will be a Congress government.
All right. It'll be a Congress government. Let's see what happens, Shabam. And good luck to the Congress party, the BRS and the BJP. Let's hope that the best party wins. Thank you all very much for being with us. Next up on the show, farm fires in Punjab have disappeared, but the air pollution across large parts of North India has been horrific. There is some welcome relief with evening rainfall in the national capital a few hours back, but it is a bit much to link the right to breathe with the hope that it rains. On the show tonight, going well beyond Punjab's annual agricultural stubble burning nightmare, the overall cause of air pollution in the national capital region, that's what I want to focus on. But let's talk for a moment about how farm fires have actually been coming down dramatically. Effectively, there is none at the moment as we speak in Punjab. And let me explain. The severely polluted air quality in the national capital region comes at a time when agricultural stubble burning in Punjab has almost ended. So therefore, you cannot argue that air pollution should have come down since stubble burning has ended. Evidence of farm fires having come down comes from satellite data, also a government count on a daily basis of actual farm fires in Punjab. As we look at the causes of air pollution in Delhi, let's first look at the farm fire situation in Punjab from the 21st of November onwards. This NASA imagery comes from their Worldview system. This is the farm fire situation on the 21st of November. There were 513 fires. On the 22nd of November, there were 512 fires. And you can see the dots. Each dot is a fire. On the 23rd of November, this went down drastically to 205. On the 24th of November, it went down further to 191. On the 25th of November, another drastic drop. You can see the dots just disappearing. And finally, yesterday, there were just 63 fires. Now, compare yesterday's fire count, 63 fires, that's on your left, with what it was on the 15th of November, that's on your right, when there was a whopping 2,544 fires which were recorded. Incredible what it was, and terrible from a health standpoint, but that's gone. But if you had hoped for the air quality in Delhi to improve immediately, it's not. It's improved in the last couple of hours, but it's certainly not enough. So joining us now, Anumita Roy Chaudhary, Dr. Bhargav Krishna, Professor S.K. Dhaka, and Palak Balyan, they are all experts looking at this issue. As you can see, we haven't got any political leaders on this because we don't want any shouting and screaming. Anumita, in very basic terms, stubble burning has gone down. It is a fact that it affects our health. But why has pollution remained high in the NCR over the last several days?
You're so right, Vishnu, because fire season is over now. And yet today we are in very poor. But if you really look at location-wise data, then Wazirpur, Munka, you know, these are the areas which are already in severe level. And what is interesting is that when we look at the data coming from IITM and they forecast that how different pollution sources are contributing to air quality in Delhi, today the top contributor are vehicles, followed by the surrounding cities, Sonipat, Ghaziabad, Gurugram, Panipat. And then you have the waste burning happening, solid fuels, industry and so forth. So clearly it is local and pollution in our surrounding region, and we have not yet been able to figure out how to scale up change. And therefore that's where we are really slipping hard. If you ask state governments what they are doing, they will list something for you. But none of that is adding up to the scale of change needed to cut emissions at source so that we can meet the clean air standards. So that's where we really need to focus on that by sector. Do we have a target? Do we know what kind of infrastructure that we need to create to address the gap in action and implementation? Have we tied up resources, funding with it? And where's the data and the numbers? Just not in Delhi, but in all the big four cities around Delhi and the smaller towns beyond that and the industrial areas.
Right.
So so that's where we really need to focus today.
So Dr. Bhargav Krishna, let me ask a basic question. When stubble burning happens, does it actually push Delhi or the NCR over the edge? In other words, there was this level of thermal power plants being major pollutants which existed. There was this level of vehicular pollution that always existed. In a sense, we've normalized that. But the air pollution index shoots to 500, 600, sometimes up to 1,000 because of stubble burning. Is that the difference?
Absolutely, Vishnu. You're entirely right in your characterization of the problem, because stubble burning is just a sort of symptom that pushes us over the edge, right? It's not that Delhi doesn't have poor air quality aside from the season that stubble burning happens. Delhi has terrible air quality all throughout the year. If you look at our annual average exposures to PM2.5 in the city, we are looking at air quality levels that are 15 times what the WHO considers acceptable, and far higher than what even our own much more relaxed national ambient air quality standards consider acceptable. And so we are not looking at this as a sort of long-term issue in the way that we should be doing. What we're looking at it is as a political game, where trying to identify what are these seasonal sources that we can attribute blame to, not necessarily looking at the longer-term, more complicated, challenging issues that we need to address at a city level and at a regional level. Anumita's work, for instance, has shown recently that the thermal power plant standards being not met at all of the regional thermal power plants around Delhi and NCR are a big contributor to air pollution in the area. But this is also true of the rest of the Indo-Gangetic Plain. Our thermal power plant standards were notified, for instance, in 2015. They came into force in 2017, and yet we are nowhere close to meeting those standards across the whole of the country. We're talking about this at a time when coal use is only going to grow, and there are more and more thermal power plants that are coming into force and coming online each day.
Professor S.K. Dhaka, are there certain climactic factors overhead Delhi which actually result in pollution lingering in the air longer than in other areas? What is a thermal inversion? I keep reading the words thermal inversion. What exactly is that?
Thank you. I was listening to my people who are really talking about, but I'd like to add very, very important point. We must remember about the meteorological conditions. Hmm. So meteorological conditions is very important key factor, and we cannot directly say whether the crop burning is contributing or not contributing. It has a variability. The variability is from 5% to maybe it can go up to 35%, 40%. It depends. I think the episode of 2nd November, if you remember, when the schools were shut down and everything was really in a very bad condition in Delhi. So that took about 48 hours to reach to Delhi. And the contribution was about 30-35%. But that is true. You mentioned it correctly now. The fire is almost gone. But there are many other factors. One is transport. The another is very low wind, calm conditions. And we are also having now hazy conditions, so we are having very sunlight. So these are some factors which basically contribute and the stagnation of this pollution over Delhi. As you mentioned about this thermal inversion, it is something that the boundary layer is coming down slowly, and when the boundary layer is very, very low, so there is no vertical or horizontal dispersion of the pollutants. So whatever is already in the city, the emission, it is keep on adding. And there is no way, it is not going away. And because of this low boundary layer, that is another meteorological condition which we cannot do. It's all a very natural process. But nevertheless, that the factors which are really coming from transport, and as my, I think...
Other factors as well. Yeah, no, we'll come to that. But before I go across to Palak, I thought our viewers need a little bit of reminding on why we are doing this. Because we do this 10, 15, 20 times every year for the last 10 years. Anumita and I have been discussing this. Here's the reason. We keep talking about PM 2.5, right? So let's have this graphic up full scale, so that our viewers know what PM 2.5, that's the stuff we are breathing out there, actually does. PM 2.5 has sulfate, which can kill those with a lung or heart disease. It is absolutely a poison. Let's move on to what else it has. It has black carbon, right? Cancer, birth defects, respiratory disease. Organic carbon, which causes damage to liver. And we could go on. Nitrate, which is cancer causing. Ammonia, which results in the burning of eyes, blindness, lung damage or death, salt, which causes hypertension and high blood pressure, chlorine, which causes a tightness in the chest, wheezing, and a difficulty in breathing, and potassium, which causes burning of eyes, skin, and a shortness of breath. That's why we are discussing all of this. It's not because of any other factor. Ultimately, this is why we are doing it. Palak, people also want to know about solutions. There was this big idea that let's induce the seeding of rainfall over the national capital region. Is that feasible?
Vishnu, yeah, about the solution. So actually, before I go to solution, we should know two things, in fact, first. That first thing, that this problem is not just a city problem.
Yeah, it's not.
We have the air pollution problem now across India. So urban and rural both are equally polluted. And the second point, which is very important, is that this is just not the winter season problem. So it's a year-round problem. And for solution also, we should not jump to the solution which are very active solution or just a single time or a season-specific solution. So when it comes to solution, it should be year-round solution and across the India. So we should focus more on the solution which are, for example, it should not be like season focus. If we year-round we work on the problem, then as Dr. Dhaka also mentioned about the metrology, then metrology will somehow improve the air quality in Delhi. Because if we do all the problems, for example, vehicular emission is an important source. And if we work on vehicular emission throughout the year, so that way we can able to protect our winter season too. So we can able to protect Delhiites from this winter season problem. So the important point is that we should focus more throughout the year solutions,
right,
rather than having these active solutions which are require more resources and also not very effective. So that was
Bhargav Krishna. Is it not effective, the seeding of rainfall? I know it's happened in some parts of the world. Is it at all? Because we're looking for desperate solutions to a desperate problem. So I'm sorry if it's a desperate question. It is.
No, I mean, it is a desperate situation, right? But I think the question of whether cloud seeding is the answer or not kind of obfuscates the bigger problem. I think if we've reached the point where we are saying that we are going to resort to cloud seeding, it's an admission that we have failed in everything else that we are trying to do. We have failed at regulating industry. We have failed at regulating emissions from transport. We have not reduced dust from construction sites. We have not reduced biomass burning or crop stubble burning. So if we have failed at everything and this is our last resort or Hail Mary, then we're really in trouble because this is going to be a problem all the time and we can't keep seeding clouds all the time. Cloud seeding may be an immediate temporary relief for maybe a couple of days, but as we see even now, you can have rain in the evening, but in 2-3 hours, the air pollution levels are already back up. There's only so much you can do with a sort of emergency intervention like this. This is not even getting into the area of whether the kind of chemicals that are used in cloud seeding could potentially even have health effects themselves, not related to air pollution.
Yeah. So that, Anumita, a few years back, we were looking at BS3 emission vehicles and BS4 emission vehicles. We are now on to Bharat Stage 6. We've got low sulfur diesel as well. Why has that not had or has it had any impact which, you know, we should be relatively happy about?
So there is a plus and a minus there. Plus is that with all the effort that we have made to improve vehicular emissions and reduce use of diesel in the city, we have actually seen reduction in transport diesel usage by about 46%. And the share of diesel cars in the new car sales have also down from 35% to 72.2%. Now, even though we have seen this technology improvement and reduction of emissions per unit of vehicle, but that improvement is getting swamped by the sheer volume of traffic and the numbers that are overwhelming the city today. And unless we are able to fix the mobility crisis in the city, we will not be able to do this. Remember, Delhi has also achieved 12% electrification of the new fleet. And yet we are in this mess because we are just not being able to make the solution work. Delhi also has the largest electric bus numbers. And yet the bus ridership is coming down drastically, down by 48%. So clearly what is happening today is that we have got half-baked solutions. So yes, we are taking one step forward, but at the same time, because it's not properly detailed out for scale of change, so we are just not seeing the impact of that change anymore. So what we really need to focus on today is that just improving vehicular technology of the internal combustion engine in Delhi is not sufficient anymore. While we need to move towards zero emission, scale up electrification, but simultaneously more important to see the mobility transition. So that Delhi master plan's target that at least 80% of the daily travel trips should be by public transport, scaled up walking and cycling infrastructure and compact city design and restraint on personal vehicle usage. For that, we have the policies, we have the rules. These are written in the Clean Air Policy that for the Delhi and NCR, but we just simply not being able to make it happen on ground. And that's where we are really failing. So that's at the big gap in action. So wherever the behavioral change is now going to matter, we are not being able to do this. Sure. So let's focus on the key gaps in action, talk hard solution, which is one, as I said, mobility transition. Second, the massive technology and energy transition in the industry sector, give them affordable clean fuel. And then the waste management. You cannot address waste burning if 30% of Delhi is still outside the formal waste collection of the municipality. It's all piling up to be burnt. So just plant the infrastructure and then tie up the investment with it, set targets and monitor around the year whether you are achieving those targets in terms of systems and infrastructure change. Make it monitorable and get report card on the basis of the progress made, not just, shout every year during winter and take emergency action.
Well, those are sobering thoughts. I'd like you, once again, all of you, for joining us. It ultimately boils down a great deal to political will. Would anybody in any party, in any government, in our democracy be willing to tell people, sorry, the sale of cars is now being restricted or banned for the time being, and we have options, and those options are public transport? Unless that actually happens, car numbers will keep going up because cars are aspirational. We are a developing economy. And that perhaps is one of the key crisis points as far as air pollution is concerned. Thank you all very much for being with us. We're going to take a short break at this. Up after that, a very special report. Houseboats and Dal Lake in Kashmir have been synonymous forever. But now, despite an upsurge in tourism, houseboat owners are struggling. The number of houseboats has dwindled. Can a key part of Kashmir's identity be saved?
A dense fog has engulfed the Dal Lake in Srinagar as the temperature plunges below freezing point in Kashmir. The fabulous houseboats have been obscured by fog, but when the fog fades away, behind the glittering lights of houseboats, there is a shocking reality of decay. Kashmir is silently witnessing the disappearance of houseboats on its water bodies. According to the Kashmir Houseboat Owners Association, in the last 3 decades, the number of houseboats on the Dal Lake, the Nagin Lake, Chinar Bagh and Jhelum River have come down to just 750 houseboats from 2000. There are a host of reasons for the sharp decline.
अभी तक का जो फिगर है वो बिल्कुल डाउन होता जा रहा है. कोई डूब जाता है, कोई जल जाता है, किसी फैक्टर से किसी की मेंटेनेंस नहीं हो पा रही है. तो ये फैक्टर इसमें है कि कभी टूरिज्म भी नहीं रहा था, तो उसकी वजह से लोगों के पास वो फाइनेंशियल असिस्टेंस नहीं थी जिससे वो ये चीज़ें अपनी जो ये अपने मार्क रखे, आजकल के मतलब जो टूरिज्म की डिमांड है उसके साथ कम्पीट करवाए. तो लोग इसमें डिसइंटरेस्टेड भी हो गए. बहुत सारों ने ये काम सरेंडर कर लिया और उन्होंने ये काम बिल्कुल छोड़ ही दिया.
हाउस बोट इज द identity of Kashmir tourism and a main attraction for tourists. Whoever comes to Kashmir doesn't want to go back without a night stay at houseboat. And here are the tourists who have come from Ahmedabad, and we'll try to know their experience in the valley and also more particularly in a houseboat. They did after Kashmir mein thehri.
5 days.
और आपने ये कहा कि नहीं, you have to stay in a houseboat.
Yes.
तो आपने पहले ही प्लान बनाया था कि houseboat में रहेंगे या यहाँ आके ये मन बना?
नहीं, पहले से ही प्लान था हमारी टूर में, पहले से ही प्लान था कि यहाँ आए हैं तो houseboat में तो रहना ही है, वन नाइट स्टे करना ही है, और यहाँ से टिपिकल कश्मीरी सब कुछ वाकिफ हो सकते हैं हम, चीजें ये हम सबको ये होटल्स में नहीं मिलती ये सब चीजें.
ऑल दिस अट्रैक्ट्स पीपल एंड व्हेन यू सी थ्रू द विंडो यू सी द ब्यूटीफुल डल लेक एंड द माउंटेन्स अराउंड. सिंस ऑलरेडी वी सी विंटर हैज सेट इन एंड टेम्परेचर इन मोस्ट पार्ट्स ऑफ द कश्मीर इज नाउ बिलो फ्रीजिंग पॉइंट. आफ्टर सम टाइम यू विल सी लार्ज डल लेक इज ऑल्सो फ्रोजन एंड दोज टूरिस्ट हु कम हियर दे एंजॉय एक्चुअली लिविंग ऑन द फ्रोजन लेक.
Houseboats as floating resorts for tourists gained traction in the 19th century after British businessman R. Foster made the Clermont houseboat on the western shores of the Dal Lake. After he failed to buy land in the valley due to local laws that barred non-locals from owning land in Kashmir even during the British Raj, the Clermont is still a most favored destination for diplomats, celebrities and foreign tourists. Even as the 7 houseboat fleet is now reduced to 3 houseboats only. The who's who from across the world have visited Kashmir and stayed here in the last about 80 years, and the walls of the houseboat's reception are adorned by their photographs.
Yahan ki siyasat bhi tareekh bhi iske saath judi hai. Jab ek influential angrez yahan aata hai Kashmir ki sair ke liye, wo Kashmir ke saath mohabbat karta hai, fir yahan chahta hai makan banaye. महाराजा ने उसको मकान बनाने की इजाज़त नहीं दी, तो फिर महाराजा ने क्या उस आप पानी पे रहो एक हाउस बोट बना, उसके बारे में हमें आप
बताइए. मसूद साहब जब वो अंग्रेज़ आए निगीन में रहे कश्मीर, उनको बहुत पसंद आया, तो उन्होंने उनके दिमाग में यही आया कि मैं यहाँ ज़मीन खरीद के अपनी कुछ प्रॉपर्टी बनाऊँगा जहाँ मैं हर साल यहाँ आ सकूँगा और अपनी प्रॉपर्टी में रहूँगा. तो उसने महाराजा को अप्रोच किया, महाराजा का दोस्त था, तो महाराजा से रिक्वेस्ट की कि मुझे ज़मीन चाहिए. महाराजा ने डिक्लाइन किया एज पर लोकल लॉज.
बिल्कुल बिल्कुल.
तो एट द सेम टाइम महाराजा ने उनको ये एडवाइस की
कि पानी पे
हाउस बोट ले लो,
पानी पे हाउस बोट. दरअसल मैं आपको बताऊं, ये जो लोकल लॉज जिसकी बादशाह बात कर रहे हैं, ये 5 अगस्त 2019 तक चल रहे थे, जिसे स्टेट सब्जेक्ट लॉ कहते थे, या 35A जो धारा 370 के साथ ख़त्म हुआ. कोई भी अगर ब्रिटिश राज था, लेकिन ब्रिटिशर्स को भी यहाँ कश्मीर में ज़मीन लेने की इजाज़त नहीं थी.
The ban on making of new houseboats and large repairs has been enforced by the Jammu Kashmir High Court after complaints that houseboats are polluting the Dal Lake in the absence of a property sewage treatment system. Even as the government built sewage treatment plants for houseboats twice in the past, it failed both the times. Now a fresh effort is being made to address the most challenging issue. Houseboats have literally disappeared from the Jhelum River and the Chenar Bagh because most of them could not keep pace with market demand and giving modern facilities to tourists. Some houseboats which are still there are facing decay. Aging houseboats do not get repair on time because of delays in official permission and availability of cedar wood.
Water bodies in Nigeen, Dal Lake, Chenar Bagh, River Jhelum. जी, 750 के करीब रहे होंगे.
कितने में से?
कुछ फिगर हमारे पास जो था अर्ली 90s का, 2000 का था. उसमें अगर आपको नजर आएगा फिर यही डिलेक्स क्लास हाउस बोट जो है, जो अच्छा मेंटेन अभी तक किया है लोगों ने, वो डल और निगीन में ही नजर आएगा कहीं कहीं पे. तो बाकी जो दो वाटर बॉडीज है वहाँ पे तो खत्म ही हो.
In the last 1 year, over a dozen deluxe houseboats have caught fire in the Nagin and Dal Lakes. In a recent blaze, 3 tourists from Bangladesh died
after fire engulfed 5 houseboats. Houseboats are made of wood, including cedar, having exquisite art of wood carving. They represent culture and the age-old traditions of Kashmir. As the Kashmir Valley was primarily a series of water bodies, life on water and water transportation is as old as the recorded history of Kashmir. There is also a Gujarati link to Kashmir's boat and water transportation. And it was the Mughal Emperor Akbar who improvised the boats in Kashmir.
Earliest reference we have is again from medieval Sanskrit sources, wherein they speak about water, bathhouses which were located on boats on rivers. So this is something that you know about it. Then you also have a reference towards bridges, which was basically made of boat bridges across the river Jhelum. But then as we come towards the late medieval and early modern period, the Sultanate period, you find that there's a reference where it's mentioned when Sultan Zainul Abidin was constructed Zain al-Lank, he basically got sailors and boatsmen from Gujarat who were well versed with operating as well as crafting boats with sail to sort of travel over the water. So this is the sort of a notion wherein you get about the fact that there is a certain amount of improvisement happening and there's a certain cultural transfer to Kashmir.
So our boats have a Gujarat connection.
There is a Gujarati connection there, yes, indeed there is. But then that would be acceptable because of the fact that Kashmir was attracting a certain amount of skill and technical skill and certain amount of patronage was coming from the court. So there is something here, there is money here, so people are coming here.
Kashmir is witnessing a boom in tourism over the last few years. Tourist arrivals have broken all previous records. But its signature floating resorts, the houseboats, are struggling to keep afloat. With Nazir Masoodi, Bureau Report, NDTV.